The Cowboys officially established themselves as the kings of the NFC, at least the kings of the NFC East. The Bills shake the monkey off the back and get the win over the Chiefs. But what sustainable performances are there in that offense? And finally, Joe Flacco. Yeah, Joe Flacco has revitalized the Cleveland Browns. What am I even saying right now? All that and more coming up on the Week 14 Sunday Recap. Let's get into it. It's Monday, December 11th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is, you know it, obviously, it's the wonderful Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Well, not much. It's great to be talking to the lovely, the brilliant, the tireless Matt Harmon. And what would be better to be on your podcast, Week 14? We're getting really close to the fantasy playoffs. This was a big Sunday for a lot of people. Some people are happy right now. Some people are not happy. Somebody who is happy is producer Colin, who's a big Dallas Cowboy fan. And the big thing with Cowboys, get a beat, you need a big boy win, right? A lot of wins over teams that aren't contenders. Big boy win on Sunday night.
Yes, it was a big boy win. It is week 14. Week 14 was very interesting and really kind to us in a lot of different ways. Week 14, man, after tonight, only three more of these recap shows left, Scott. We are coming down to the wire here. The season has started to slip away like an avalanche, and that avalanche is exactly what fell on the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday Night Football. Cowboys 33, Eagles 13, the lone touchdown for the Philadelphia Eagles comes from Jalen Carter, the rookie defensive lineman. Look, I thought the Cowboys were going to win this game. I thought Cowboys -3.5 was a good bet. I didn't think they'd win the game by quite this much, nor did I think the Eagles would be that much of a letdown offensively. And, doesn't it feel like, Scott, this performance from the Eagles has been building a little bit? Like, I know you've been talking about it. You said that the 49ers are clearly better than the Eagles for quite some time. And, you know, I've been a little slower on that uptake, I think, than you've been. So that's a credit to you. Tonight really was a reminder to me that, like, what I think about the Eagles is, you know what? Yeah, they have a great record. You know, they usually have better players than you do, like their opposing team. I'm not so sure that's the case with the Cowboys, who have just a stacked roster top to bottom. And you get a result like this, Scott, when honestly some of your best players, Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, like those are supposed to be the guys. They left some plays or it committed some negative plays. And I think that's when you get this sort of avalanche performance here.
Yeah, you know, the Eagles, when they were a 10-1 team, they didn't have the metrics that matched up to a 10-1 team. And they were the poker player hitting all their flush draws and straight draws. They were the driver hitting all the green lights. And we saw tonight three fumbles. They all go to Dallas, right? There were fumbles in the first meeting, as Colin pointed out, but Dallas didn't recover those fumbles. So it was just, tonight was the night where things went Dallas's way. In fact, if you look at the team stats, Dallas did not dominate this game in a way that's maybe commensurate with a 33-13 final, but they were the better team. It felt like a just result. And yeah, I know we almost never talk. I got to mention this. I know we almost never talk about kickers on this show. And some people think they shouldn't even be in fantasy football. And my feeling is always, look, you get a scrap for every point, whether that's kickers. A couple weeks ago, I was talking about look-ahead defenses. The Saints were a look-ahead defense. They really paid off today. Brandon Aubrey, what a story. I think everybody knows it by now. He was in college. He wasn't even a football player. He ends up joining the Cowboys. He hasn't missed a kick. He's the guy's, I mean, he's basically turned into Justin Tucker. He's automatic from anywhere on the field. He changes, like the tush push changes the Philadelphia calculus, where it's like, okay, it's 1st and 9, not 1st and 10. I feel like Aubrey changes some of the Dallas calculus. And it's so crazy that last year the Cowboys put terror into, you know, Brett Maher just got the yips. He could miss from anywhere. He couldn't make extra points. It was, even if you weren't a Dallas fan, it was hard to watch that. It's like watching a catcher who can't throw the ball back to the pitcher or something like that, or a putter, a golfer who can't make a 3-foot putt all of a sudden. And Dallas has gone from maybe the worst kicking situation in the league to the best. And that's just one of those things. And tonight you could see Mike McCarthy, who often looks really nervous in these games. He looked confident. I think he knew early on they had control of this game. And the schedule's been talked about a lot. Philadelphia, they have a much easier schedule. They could easily still win the division. And we have kind of come along to the idea that maybe San Francisco has separated themselves. God, that they look good today. They're just unfair, all the talent they have. But it's just a more interesting NFL when a Philadelphia team that maybe was a little bit overrated, maybe had outkicked its metrics, they get a little bit of correction. Maybe Dallas was due to put this win on the map against the legitimate contender. They do it. It just makes the whole NFL more interesting. It makes the MVP race more interesting. And Dallas has things you can set your watch by, right? CeeDee Lamb's great every week. Jake Ferguson, we talked about him a lot early in the season, how all those secondary metrics were good for him. Wait for it. He's become a really reliable player. And Dak Prescott's playing the best football of his career. So college basketball better if Duke is good. College football better if Notre Dame is good, right? Or Alabama. I'm not an Alabama fan, but, you know, I mean, they're in the college championship game. Maybe the college championship quarterfinals. Maybe they should semifinals. Maybe they shouldn't be. You know, FSU went undefeated. But Alabama is a polarizing team. You love them. You hate them. And Dallas is that in the NFL. It's just a better league when the Cowboys are one of the teams that can win the championship. And that's what we have.
Your point about Mike McCarthy is spot on. And it's weird, too, because it's actually a really good juxtaposition with the Eagles, who usually come in with this brash, bravado, confidence. I think that simmers down, trickles down from Nick Sirianni, the head coach. Whereas Dallas, I think Mike McCarthy, you're right, they usually have this, like, oh boy, like what's gonna go wrong type of energy. And it felt like that was inverse tonight, at least to me. Like it felt as if the Eagles were kind of like a little tighter, a little more like what's gonna go wrong, how can we, and then things went wrong, and it was almost like, geez, like how is this happening? And meanwhile, like Mike McCarthy, I don't know if he's still hopped up on the pain meds from his appendix surgery or whatever. I mean, shout out to him for even being out there, but yeah, you know, he was just, that felt cool, calm, and collected. But you know what? Like for Dallas, that's earned confidence, man, because the run that they have been on since that 49ers Sunday Night Football beatdown. I mean, it's crazy that, you know, again, Sunday Night Football in week 5 to Sunday Night Football in week 14, it feels like two completely different teams.
It sure does. I love the way you analyze the body language, where Nick Sirianni usually has that smug, I know something that you don't know look.
Yes.
And Mike McCarthy always looks like he showed up at a college class and he had the wrong date for the test. He thought the test was on Friday and it was on Wednesday and he hadn't studied.
Remember that?
So tonight was totally different. Let's also just point out some usage trends. The backfield for Dallas, 16 carries for Pollard, 12 carries for Rico Dowdle, and he got a touchdown. Pollard did catch 7 short passes, only 1 for Dowdle, but this at one point was entirely Tony Pollard's backfield, and Dowdle was getting not even enough touches to be considered as a flex, what the heck flex guy, or some people weren't even sure if he was worth it as a contingency upside pick. I think Dowdle certainly earned that. Not that he ran wild or anything, 3.8 yards a carry. We know Philadelphia's front line is pretty stout, but this has become more of a 1A, 1B, or a, you know, a 70-30, and 75-25, whatever it is. Dowdle is more important to them than maybe he was a month ago. And they've gotten some of the secondary receivers going. Michael Gallup catches a touchdown. Yeah. Brandon Cooks just missed. He probably should have had a touchdown late in the game. I don't think he made the greatest adjustment on an absolute dime that Dak dropped in the corner of the end zone. So you need stars. CeeDee Lamb, star. Dak Prescott, star. Jake Ferguson's a very good football player. But you also need, Brandon Cooks is starting to maybe be the guy not tonight so much, but maybe the guy they expected. They're getting contributions from Gallup. We know the defense has been turnover heavy all year. Dallas isn't the best team in football. That's San Francisco. I think we've come to consensus on that. But that second best team, it could be Baltimore. It could be Dallas. It could be a lot of Miami. You know, it could be a lot of different teams right now. So we're at a point in the NFL where just a lot of things are in flux. The MVP odds seem to change every minute, every game, and all that stuff. And for the NFL, for the NFC to be maximum interesting, we wanted Dallas to win tonight. That's what writers always say. We're rooting for the story, right? We're not picking a side. We're just rooting for the story. The NFL's better because Dallas won tonight. They earned it. And it's just, you know, you're a receiver guy. It's just nice to see CeeDee Lamb spreading his wings. You know, A.J. Brown did have that fumble, but he was 9 for 94. He's a grown-ass man. Devonta Smith had some nice plays. Unfortunately, late fumble in this game. Dallas Goedert, just good to see him back on a football field, because we need tight ends, man. And, you know, at least Goddard and Ferguson have earned the rights as must start plays. And unless you're lucky enough to have somebody like who's the Browns tight end who went off today. I can't think of his name right now.
David Njoku.
Yeah, of course, David Njoku, the Joker. It's even nice to see him back. So we've had a year where scoring's been difficult. Today there were some games, there were some scoreless games late, a 3-0 game in the NFL. You almost never see that, but it was just nice to see Dallas spreading its wings tonight. Collins happy. And I'm happy because the NFL makes a little bit more sense. There's so much stuff you can't figure out. Nobody sees Zach Wilson throwing for 300 yards or Joe Flacco revitalizing the Cleveland passing game. But this was a result that made sense, where you connected dots and there was a linear pattern. And because that's not always common in the NFL, I appreciate it when we see it.
Yeah, I think it would have been like a weird slap in the face if Dak, who was on a complete tear, you know, coming into this game, the 7 games prior, they only lose once to these Eagles, and he has a 121.5 passer rating, 71% completion rate, 9.97 adjusted yards per attempt, which is absurd for a 7 game stretch. I mean, like, full stop, that's just stuff you don't see from an NFL quarterback over an extended stretch. It would have sucked and felt, like I said, a weird slap in the face if he comes in here and lays an egg against the Eagles team that, like we said, just really isn't playing to its full potential, just not playing like that 2022 team. So this result does make sense. I think you're so right to point out the usage trends, like getting, you know, more out of less usage for Michael Gallup or less usage for Tony Pollard has been a good thing for this offense. So it feels like they figured it out. It feels like they have the right formula. And then the Eagles, I do think their box score is crazy, by the way. If you just, like, they literally threw to four players. Like, that's the Scott Pianowski special. And one of them, they only threw to him one time for a pretty nice 28-yard play. So they're still trying to figure things out. I'm not sure what the future holds for the Eagles this year. To me, it just feels like it's just not that year for them, but it does feel like it's that year for Dallas. So before we move on here, Scott, into the rest of the games that we got to talk about, the headliners, Dak Prescott, MVP, yes, no?
He's the front runner right now. Yeah. He has to be.
I agree. I think he has to be.
The main reason why is because what San Francisco holds the one seed right now, there's just such a referendum on how good is Brock Purdy, how much of it is his surrounding, which is, I always say, the greatest thing and the most frustrating thing about NFL debates is that you can give as much credit or blame to anybody as you want. And a lot of people are just reluctant to come around on the idea that Brock Purdy maybe being an MVP candidate because he's being dragged by so many great players around him. But this is when the season really gets great. And we got a bunch of standalone games coming. We get Saturday games coming. We get 2 Monday night games coming. So one of the most fun and frustrating things about NFL is, like, you know, the 1 o'clock window comes and there's so much going on, your head's on a swivel, and I always feel like I'm missing stuff. But when there's a singular game, you get to watch everything really close and all the replays, and you hear the talk. Mike Tirico made a great point, by the way. The number one rated left tackle and left guard are both on the Cowboys. Why do you think Dak Prescott is so comfortable in the pocket? He's not afraid of getting hit on his blind side. What an advantage to have that going in your back pocket. But it's just so nice to have all these standalone games. And so it seems every week we have, you know, Buffalo, Kansas City, Dallas, Philly. Philly just played San Francisco. It just next week, what Dallas plays Buffalo, which is going to be a fascinating game. There's a Miami-Dallas game coming down the pike really soon. I think it really got interesting that the AFC East and the NFC East, those teams played, because there's just so many, you know, there's two really interesting teams in both of those divisions. So we get a round robin there. And I'm pumped, man. Fantasy football playoffs are a little bit stressful at times, but it's win or go home time. I hope you've qualified in a lot of yours. I'm in the playoffs in most of my leagues, and I'm ready to throw my chips in the middle. Let's get this done.
Let's get this done. Let's get this version of Dak Prescott against the 49ers one more time. I want to see that.
I want that rematch. They just showed their worst face. That game got out of hand so quickly. And who knows? Maybe San Francisco's just going to stomp everybody. I don't know. I feel like Debo Samuel just had 3 more touchdowns since we started talking about this game. And somehow they're getting everybody home. You know, the whole thing with the Niners is like they're going to cannibalize each other. Maybe not.
Maybe not. All right. Let's move past this game. Let's get into the rest of the headliners here from week 14, starting with Bills 20, Chiefs 17. A rather unusual game if you followed this rivalry for the last few years, right? We're typically treated to high-flying affairs, big-time fantasy outings, right, when the Chiefs and Bills get together. I think we all knew, Scott, based on how these teams have played this year, that it was not going to be that kind of game. It wasn't that kind of game, but very eventful final few seconds where I think I'm here in Virginia Beach. They're playing this game in Kansas City. I think I could hear Sean McDermott exhale from here.
Yeah, it's a shame that one of the coolest plays we saw all day was that lateral that would have won it for Kansas City. Gets Darius wiped Tony. Up. Yeah, right. Darius Tony finally justifies his existence, and then no, it's the play goes away. That would have been one of the plays of the year. But the story here to me is how the defense has controlled this game. You know, Patrick Mahomes, 6.3 yards per attempt. Josh Allen felt like was under duress all game, especially in the second half. 5.5 yards per attempt. He gets sacked three times. A lot of fantasy players come in under expectation. There, people were hoping, could there be a Kansas City back could feel good about? Not really. I thought Edwards-Helaire looked okay, but I mean, 68 total yards, no touchdown. That's not going to get you there. McKinnon only had 7 touches. You got to tell me. You got to talk. I know the panic meter is something you and Andy do. Stephon Diggs, man, 11 targets, 24 yards. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs have a good defense, but you would like to think that Buffalo could find a way to scheme Stephon Diggs open. They couldn't do it. I don't know. I watched, maybe I shouldn't have done this map, but Saturday night, I rewatched the 13 seconds game.
Oh,
and then
wow.
I was ping-ponging with, or at least I watched most of it, and certainly the end of it. You know, the last time Gabe Davis was somebody we could start with any confidence. Nice bagel today for Gabe Davis, by the way. But I rewatched the end of that game, and I was texting with Frank. We're trying to rank that as, where is that in the pantheon of playoff games that weren't Super Bowl games? Frank deferred to the Miami Chargers famous ladder game that had a lateral in it from the early 80s. But I mean, that game was the Buffalo Bills game, the Chiefs game that year, were 13-second game was one of the best games in history. Today was competitive, was close, had lead changes. But I just look at teams that the Bills still may not make it in the playoffs, and I feel like they just eked over the finish line, and Kansas City's offense still looks fundamentally broken to me. I know we didn't get the production we wanted from Rashee Rice other than a fumble. He had volume, he had catches, he had a touchdown. He's a good player, but I feel like there's a piece missing from this Kansas City offense, and I picked Buffalo in this game, so I guess I'm a little bit satisfied that was right, because you know as well as I do, we make so many predictions, you're going to be comically wrong on some things, and we have a lot of Pianowski wrong stuff coming later in this podcast. I'm not sure we have enough time banked, Colin, to get to all of that stuff, but this is a game where I didn't feel great about either team when the game ended, and I didn't even feel like the conclusion was all that satisfying either.
Yeah, I feel you, man. And you're so right that 13 seconds game feels like, these are totally different teams. It's so far gone. And I mean, even the Bills aren't that different of a team when you look at it, but it feels very different. Now, the Chiefs, on the other hand, are a fundamentally different team. And, it's why I've kind of laughed at the idea. It's like, well, you know what? If they just get this passing offense down to Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce, it'll be fine. Well, no, because like you said, there is still clearly something missing here. And I do think the absence of Isaiah Pacheco rang pretty loud in this one. Pacheco's not a perfect running back. You know, he's got kind of wonky vision. He's got a weird running style, all that. But he had given them a legit dimension the last 2 weeks, or at least the prior 2 weeks, but without Jerick McKinnon on the field, like just having him as that feature back really, again, I think gave them something. And he's not a guy that has a clear timeline to return next week. I mean, it sounds like he won't go on IR, but it's no lock that he's back next week, which stinks because, yeah, I'm with you. I don't come out of this game feeling like, all right, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I'm going to saddle him up in fantasy, or Jerick McKinnon, this is going to be another legendary end of season run. I think there was a piece missing going into this game, and now there's like two pieces missing from this offense.
The good news for the Chiefs is, well, they go to Foxborough next week, the famous flex Patrick Mahomes out of Monday night game, because Beautiful. The Patriots are such a clown car, although they did win on Thursday night. We will not talk anymore about that game. But, man, the Buffalo's got a really difficult gauntlet to run. They needed this game. This is the game that the Bills had to have for blood. This is a game that the Chiefs could kind of blow off. But 2 weeks in a row, Patrick Mahomes, ball in his hands, end of the game. I realize they needed 8 points against the Packers, but it just felt like the most automatic thing in the NFL. Oh, yeah, Patrick Mahomes, we've seen this movie before, and I don't feel that way anymore. I don't blame it on Mahomes, but this is a problem you can't fix till the end of the season.
By the way, they might the NFL might have flexed in Drew Lock to that Monday night game. We'll talk about Drew Lock later, but in a year it's just like we get the Bailey Zappi situation off Monday Night Football, but you can't help but step on a backup quarterback at some point this year. Like that, okay.
I'm sure DK Metcalf will promise the league like 3 personal fouls to spice things up, so I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, no, that'll be good. Just last note on the Bills here. This matchup did look, you never want 24 yards from your top receiver, but it did set up as a tough spot for Stephon Diggs because L'Jarius Sneed, they have shown like, all right, we're going to just shadow number one receivers and see who else hurts us. It wasn't Gabe Davis that hurt them. It wasn't Khalil Shakir. It wasn't even really the tight ends. Predictably and kind of unfortunately, Dawson Knox returning. I mean, great for him that he's healthy in the mix here, but it does kind of take some of the shine off Kincaid. I need to kind of sit down and look at the like usage numbers and everything like that before really deciding whether to freak out about it. But James Cook was the guy who did step up for this team. And rather quietly, Scott, James Cook has been very productive. I don't know if it, you know, just is a coincidence, but he's been very productive with Joe Brady at the head of this offense. Where does James Cook kind of sit in your circle of trust right now?
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. But James Cook has gone from, I think he's graduated from a start sit question to somebody you're probably starting unless you're blessed with running back royalty. And nice to see him get in the end zone, albeit it was on a reception. We all know that when the Bills score a rushing touchdown, it's probably going to Josh Allen. It happens just about every week, but the big thing with James Cook was how many packages would he play in? When would he be spelled out? And even though Murray's still on the field a fair amount, even though Allen's going to run a fair amount, I feel like James Cook is somebody we can start with a fair amount of confidence forward. I tell you what, let me put it this way. He would be welcome on any of my teams.
Yeah, I like that. I'm with you. It's not a great spot next week. Dallas, I mean, you know, it can be kind of hit or miss on defense, but you get the Chargers, you get the Patriots, you get the Dolphins to end the season for the Bills, who have just about a 21% chance right now, according to the New York Times, to make the playoffs. And, I kind of come away a little iffy on them coming out of this game. And I think we can move on from, you know, those two, okay, whatever passing offenses to an extremely exciting passing offense, Scott Pianowski, the Cleveland Browns 31, Jacksonville Jaguars 27. I mean, Scott, people were kind of like whispering it coming into this week. Did Joe Flacco just give the Browns their best quarterback performance of the season? I mean, you got to shout it now. It's an inarguable fact. Joe Flacco, and what I'm about to say, like September me would have smacked somebody in the face if they heard them say this, but I'm gonna be the one to say it right now. Like Joe Flacco has given the Browns their best quarterback play of the season, period. No questions about it. They win this game. They beat the Jaguars, who have a hampered Trevor Lawrence. But I mean, Scott, there's so much getting activated for the Cleveland Browns from a passing game standpoint that just wasn't happening to start the season.
Joe Flacco is saving David Njoku's season. Joe Flacco is kind of resurrecting Amari Cooper's season. I know Elijah Moore wasn't huge today, 3 for 42 on 6 targets. Would have been a little bit disappointing for people who needed him. I had him on the sleeper page because he was still under 50% rostered. But Elijah Moore had a pretty good game the previous week against the Rams. Joe Flacco will hold the ball and let some of these deeper routes develop. And he's still got the arm strength. I know he's, 39 now, whatever it is, or he's about to be turned 39, something like that. But he's certainly better than the other backups they were using here. And we never knew what we were getting from Deshaun Watson week in, week out. I will say this, the Jaguars defense, man, they gave up some huge plays. The David Bell touchdown was just a bust, the walk-in, you know, just one of those fluke plays. I think the Jaguars have to do a lot of self-scouting and try to figure out what they are. And they've got it for a team that's going to probably win its division. That's not something we can say for 100% certain, but I'm not afraid to play anybody against the Jaguars. Let's put it that way. And I feel for anybody who's in a deeper league who may have lost because their opponent played Flacco or their opponent played Zach Wilson or anybody who lost their game today because they had CJ Stroud. It was every NFL week is weird and strange. I feel like calling a week like that, putting those terms on it, is a little bit of a cop out because that's the NFL. It's a variance league. It's a snow globe league. But more than most weeks, I thought we had things like, oh, yeah, David Njoku, number one tight end. Oh, yeah, Joe Flacco, well inside the quarterback, one cut line. But this feels sticky to me. Njoku's going to be a top 12 tight end. Elijah Moore and Amari Cooper are guys that with Cooper, you had to make sure he was healthy, but they're guys I feel good about. And also, maybe the lesser reported part of this is because of the offensive line problems, all the injuries the Browns have had, it's easier to mask those sorts of problems in the passing game than the running game. So they, this is a team, remember, just a few weeks ago, they were in that let's try to win every week 13 to 10 bucket. They're not in that bucket anymore. They're actually better off proactively throwing the ball. Only one sack. The running game averages 2.9 yards a carry. Dare I say it, the tint of this offense is a passing offense now. And who would have thought that? That's just how the NFL is, where if I was to tell you a month ago, oh, yeah, don't worry, the Browns will sign some retreat quarterback off the couch and they'll actually become more of a passing team than a running team, you would have laughed me off the show and taken open auditions for a replacement. But that's where we are right now.
You know what the funny thing about that is, though, Scott, that like, obviously, again, it's nuts and it's totally unexpected to say Joe Flacco is the one that's doing this. But if you just think about the construction of this offense, like all those players you just named off, why can't this be a great passing offense? I mean, Amari Cooper, I don't care what any stat tells you, he has played his best football of his career, certainly in like a back-to-back sense, like two seasons over consistency-wise. He's played his best football of his NFL career in a Cleveland Browns uniform. That is my opinion. I believe that very strongly. David Njoku, like, he was in this kind of pop gun, you know, low average depth of target role when the PJ Walker, Dorian Thompson, Robinson offense was out there. But like, he's a legit playmaker at tight end. I mean, Elijah Moore, I mean, the guy's good. Like, I know I sound like a crazy person when I talk it because some of his stats don't match up to it, but like, he's a good player and he's open downfield and Flacco's taking those throws. Like, and if they get anything, right, like anything out of the David Bell, Cedric Tillman, these like highly drafted players the last couple of years, like, yeah, this is, I'm not saying it's loaded or anything, but it's, these are damn good players. And I feel like Kevin Stefanski, you can see it when you're watching him during these games. Like, this is a guy who's certainly been on the ropes a couple, you know, recently, the last 2 years, especially with the whole Watson thing. It's hard for him not to be because of the salary they gave Watson. Like, why isn't the offense working? Well, it's obviously got to be the coaching. But then you see Flacco run this offense, and today he was running it a little more on time, right? Like, the time to throw is 2.77 as opposed to over 3 seconds according to Next Gen Stats. The A dot's about the same. Like, these plays have been there all along, and I feel like you can feel Kevin Stefanski being like, yeah, this rules. Like, he's got some energy to him there on the sideline watching Joe Flacco do what he's doing.
Two more quick periods, and then we'll move to the Jags. We always say, let your best players be your best players. 28 of the Flacco targets go to Njoku, Cooper, and Moore, his best players. And we also, you know, there's a confidence. The Browns were hiding DTR. They were hiding PJ Walker where they were playing. I don't think they feel like they need to hide Joe Flacco. And that just opens up the playbook. Also, it's not hard to tell, even though Moore didn't have a great game today. They had reps with the Jets. That was an advantage. This was the team that was shield. You know, they couldn't. I feel like Kevin Stefanski had to take the playbook and throw like 70% of it in the trash with his backup quarterbacks. And now with Joe Flacco, he doesn't have to do that.
On the other side of it, Jaguars-wise, I'm curious, like, what stands out to you? Because Evan Engram, certainly, he's finally getting in the end zone. He's not going to pull the Deontay Johnson, as you said a couple of weeks ago. But it's a pretty – I mean, I can't believe Trevor Lawrence played in this game, so I'm not, like, sure how much to take from a 5.1 YPA. He takes 4 sacks. He throws 3 picks. Like, I'm not sure what to take from all of this because, again, based on the Monday night reaction from Trevor Lawrence and just the vibe of that injury, I was like, oh, he's out for multiple weeks, comes out and plays in this game. Like, where are you at with the Jags coming out of this one?
I'm afraid that Christian Kirk may have been the Jenga key piece of the offense. Not that he was necessary. I mean, like, we know him and Ridley. I don't need to tell you this because you break down all this stuff on a granular level. They have different routes. They run different types of roles in the offense. But I'm really nervous that without Christian Kirk, they don't have their glue guy. And it's certainly like Engram had a great game. Fine. You know, Ridley was very inefficient on 13 targets. As you said, it's a miracle that Lawrence even played in this game. And the fact that he made it quasi-competitive at the end, for fantasy, he was okay. I mean, he got the 3 touchdowns. He had the 257 yards through the air. He's had goal line equity lately on the ground. They didn't get any of those touchdowns today, but this team, I totally feel differently about their upside with Kirk out. I'm not saying he's the best receiver on the team, but I think he might have been the most integral. It's like they took the oil out of the engine. I don't know. I think the Jaguars might be in trouble.
Yeah, Parker Washington is a nice rookie and he had a touchdown in this game, but I mean, he's still a day 3 rookie. I really like Parker Washington. I think he can be a nice player, but Christian Kirk is damn good and like one of the most underrated receivers in the NFL. And I'm with you that whether you think he's better than Calvin Ridley or whatever, it's an undeniable fact that one of these guys runs the layup routes and can do a lot more than just the little pop gun slot receiver stuff. So I'm kind of willing to co-sign that take that Trevor Lawrence is going to suffer, I think, without Christian Kirk in there. I think it's just inarguable. All right, let's move on to the next one here. Ravens 37, Rams 31. Pretty thrilling game here, Scott, that went all the way to overtime.
Yeah, game of the day. And now, I was asked so many questions beforehand because, you know, it's windy and it's rainy. And wind is what we're caring about for weather. I don't really care if it rains, unless if it's a torrential rain. And if it is, they may even stop a game. Like, you know, there were weather breaks in the Pittsburgh game a week ago. So what happens? They play a 68-point game, and both teams race over 400 yards of offense. And if you needed anything in the passing game, it wasn't guaranteed for the runners, and we'll get to that in a second. But there are a lot of Cooper Kupp questions, and I'm sure I steered some people away from Kupp. And I did consider the weather as like – here's the thing with weather. Unless the weather is absolutely biblically a nightmare. It's a way to break a tie. It's something to get to as you're analyzing other things that are part of the – DNA of a matchup analysis, but don't just say, oh, it's rainy and windy, I'm not playing anybody. Forget it. I'm going to run from this game. Even the Jets-Houston game, which people were worried about the weather there. And I mean, one side of that game got home. It was not the side we thought it was going to be, but there were a lot of questions I was asked on the Jets, and those guys were fine. If you're going to lean one way towards taking weather super seriously or not taking it that seriously, I want you to do the latter, man. It's going to be really bad, and it's going to be really windy. And I realized there were winds in this game, and that was part of why people were worried. But the other thing, too, is the weather can change. Mm-hmm. The weather can clear up. You know, Justin Tucker had no problem with the field goals. Now, I take the mea culpa on Kupp. I was really nervous about him a few weeks ago, even last week with the touchdown. I thought, okay, well, he got that fan service touchdown late. He really didn't have that great of a game. Cooper Kupp looked terrific today, scored a touchdown easily, could have had a second one, and looked pretty close to 100% to me. So we get a Rams offense, Flacco. Stafford's playing really well. The schedule is a dream. It's one of the best wide receiver and passing game schedules going forward. I realize Kyren Williams didn't get in the end zone today. Kyren Williams had a quote-unquote bad game, and he still got 28 touches. He had 113 total yards. He's an unfair – the bell cow is dead in the NFL, but there's like three or four maybe kind of kicking around. He's one of those guys. Rams players are going to win championships for people. Williams is going to be part of that. Nakua, 84 yards, no touchdown. I realize that's maybe to some people a little bit of a disappointment. That's his bad game. He had a couple of great catches today. He can really play a really narrow target concentration. The backfield's all about one guy. I am all in. The Rams lost this game. I realize this, but we just want the fantasy numbers. And man, did we get it. On the Ravens side, at least Lamar Jackson, monster game. At least all the touchdowns there from distance. And they went to every reasonable Raven you could have played. You likely was somebody we felt pretty good about since Andrews got hurt. Zay Flowers is always in play, although you're never an automatic start. Some people might have needed OBJ. We've given up on Bateman, who's had a terrible season. Aguilar's just a support piece here. So again, an offense prioritizing its main guys. The thing that makes this team tricky is Keaton Mitchell's going to play some. I guess Edwards is going to play some. And Lamar ran for 70 yards, which can really happen in any game. I never know what to do with Mitchell. There's one week I told everybody to bench Mitchell, and he had a couple of splash plays, and I got killed for it. I've been more open. And look, whatever. You go forward, you make the best decision you can. A lot of people were on the scene with Mitchell today. I said, well, he can make that one play and make your day. He did have a 27-yard run today, but 63 yards or 62 yards, no touchdowns. He only gets 10 touches. He's always, even when he plays more, he's going to split some with Edwards. He's going to split some with Lamar. And it's just a really kind of jumbled mess. Now, ironically, since Andrews got hurt, because likely isn't Mark Andrews, he's good, but he's not Mark Andrews. I feel like the Ravens passing game is so concentrated now. It's not maybe the matriculate the ball down the field offense. There was a lot of splash plays today, but man, three of them hit. Lamar ended up outscoring everybody by a bucket load. So today, I think, was a good referendum on weather, and it was a good referendum on two offenses where the quarterbacks are playing well. Jackson, quasi-MVP contender, but Stafford's been better than I expected. I think Sean McVay's been really hot. They have 110 points their last three games, and they get Washington next week. There's going to be a lot of parade routes and a lot of championship DVDs going out to people who are in this game because they're well set up for success going forward.
I mean, that was like pretty well broken down and perfectly set on both sides here. And yeah, I mean, that schedule for the Rams, Washington, New Orleans, the Giants in week 17. I mean, yeah, if you're upset about 84 yards from Puka Nacua, I mean, get a life. Like, I have no sympathy for you. But that's the thing, and you made a good point about Cooper Kupp. I agree with you that every time I saw him, I thought he looked really good. Thought he was making like downfield plays too, which they had kind of completely removed from his route tree going into this game. And that's the thing with Cooper Kupp. And obviously, ironically, it comes against what's theoretically his most difficult matchup. But man, Sean McVay and Matthew Stafford, they solved a lot of the problems that this Ravens defense was creating for people. But when you have a great player like Cooper Kupp, who is like not just stats wise, but also on field performance, just not playing to standard, not playing what you know he's capable of. Like sometimes, hey, maybe is this the cliff? Sometimes it can just like reverse course like that. And we've seen it with Keenan Allen this year, and I think this is like kind of a micro glimpse of that here. So I'm with you that I think Cooper Kupp is firmly like in the circle of trust. Puka obviously is. Even this Davis Allen guy, you know, they didn't have Tyler Higbee today. This rookie tight end Davis Allen, another fifth round draft pick for the Rams. He had one drop, but otherwise, like he was looking good out there too. So this Rams offense is kind of cooking right now.
Yeah, McVay's feeling it. I mean, they had a 3-game winning streak before today, and you can't look. You lose a game in overtime on a punt return touchdown from a player nobody's ever heard of. Although maybe if anybody's heard of him, it'd be you, Matt. But
Tylan Wallace, dude, I've got a reception perception profile on the website from Tylan Wallace. Yes,
I do. You are the best, because I often talk about my Colorado league where we draft 400 players before the season and there's no transactions. And he was undrafted in that league. That's a league where every backup quarterback is drafted, where some kickers who don't have teams yet are drafted in the hopes that they may link up with a team. That's how deep that league goes. And Wallace was undrafted in our 400 pick league.
Trust me, nothing kills me more than when people hit me up like, hey, dude, do you have a reception perception profile for this guy? I'm like, no, I don't. But the last 2 weeks, I'm on a hot streak with Parker Washington on yep. Monday Night Football and Tylan Wallace. I'm like, yep, on the site. Go check it out. Let me tell you what, nothing about Tylan Wallace's game in that profile or his college like would have made me think he was going to be the guy that wins the Ravens a game on a walk-off punt return touchdown. But hey, shout out to him. He did it. And this was a really good test case for, I think, Lamar Jackson, both in the NFL like sense and in the fantasy sense. Well, again, not a perfectly clean game, anything like that. But I think it was fair to wonder, like, okay, if the Ravens defense ever lets them down, can they win a shootout in the passing game? They win a shootout in the passing game. Obviously, again, it's won ultimately because of a walk-off punt return touchdown, but still, Jackson did his part. And, I mean, he had been a guy, Jackson, that kept making his way into the people's panic meter, and Andy was just, like, up in arms. He didn't want to talk about that. Like, I mean, nonsense-type stuff, because Lamar is obviously so good, but the fantasy results were what they were. I think this game is going to give people a lot of sigh of relief feeling as they head into their fantasy postseason.
Lamar's one of the all-time just let the game finish. Don't tweet about him in the first quarter if he looks bad or something, because he can just pile up points in a hurry. And today was like that. I don't think he played all that great. And of course, Beckham, the Rams had no interest in covering Beckham on that long touchdown, but hey, it counts. So yeah, Lamar Jackson is. And look, nobody's got a floor, man. There are tons of good players who didn't score well today. And the quarterback position has been messier this year than any other year. So if you play Lamar Jackson in the playoffs and he has a 7 or 8 point game for you, guess what? That can happen. Right now, the Chiefs don't look good on offense. Jared Goff had a terrible game today. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Nobody's going to be good every week. It used to be that the offenses you could set your watch by, the quarterbacks you could set your watch by them. That's not true anymore. So if Lamar Jackson finishes the season where he only lets you down maybe like 2 or 3 times, it's actually so much of a win.
Keep an eye, speaking of Jenga pieces, we talk about Christian Kirk, keep an eye on Kyle Hamilton, the Ravens safety. Left this game, is going to get an MRI on Monday. Like, I do think there's a chance that he could be maybe not a Jenga piece, but a big difference maker in that defense if he has to miss his time, because he was so unbelievable so far this year. Let's move on to the next game. Maybe not quite as exciting from a fantasy perspective, but a pretty important game nonetheless. Buccaneers 29, Falcons 25. Scott, I mean, don't look now, but Bucs, they might win the NFC South.
Yeah, apparently, I just in from the NFL, they will send an NFC South representative to the playoffs. The Falcons kind of went against type in this game, because normally we think of them winning these ugly games and their fantasy guys drive us crazy. Today, it was a great fantasy day, and they had a huge advantage in yardage over the Bucs. They had 8.7 yards per pass for Ridder. It was only 5 for Baker Mayfield. how did the Falcons blow this game? Well, for fantasy, I'm not sure I even care. Drake London was terrific, had a couple of awesome catches, did have a catch at the end of the game that unfortunately was just 3 or 4 yards short of the end zone, but he looked really good. He drew 11 targets. We saw a long touchdown from Kyle Pitts. Bijan Robinson was okay. 88 total yards, a touchdown, 15 touches. I'll take that. I thought Ridder actually played pretty well. There's always going to be a couple of what was he thinking on that play things with Desmond Ridder. But I'm again, 347, 8.7 yards per attempt. He ran for a touchdown. That's fine. I don't know how they lost this game because the Buccaneers, Rashad White was pretty good, but the quietest Mike Evans game you're ever going to see. He only catches one pass, 6 targets, 8 yards. So he was locked up. It's like, well, how did they win this game? Were there a bunch of turnovers? No. Was there a special teams touchdown? No. Just the Buccaneers had to have a drive at the end of game. They put it together. Baker Mayfield did account for 3 touchdowns, but all the metrics and stats and efficiency things that I look at from a football game that explain who should win and who should lose, they all point to the Falcons. So congratulations, Atlanta. You found a way to lose a game where I feel like you were the better team for about 3 hours.
Nah, it's a great point because watching this game, I was like, yeah, what? I mean, I had the same sort of feeling. Like, how are the Falcons losing this game? And it wasn't even, like you said, wasn't as if Mike Evans went off. He had 1 catch for 8 yards in this game. Because typically it's like, oh, the Bucs are watchable. The Bucs are good. Just because Mike Evans is dunking on people this year. And he didn't dunk on the Falcons today. Rashad White has cemented himself as what Sal Vietri and I called him, the king of the running back dead zone on the preview episode this past week. Like, he has survived that. But yeah, man, Falcons, I mean, this is tough because this is exactly what we want to see from their playmakers from a fantasy perspective. But obviously they lose. I will say this, though, Scott. I think that if the Falcons don't win the NFC South and don't go to the playoffs, I think there's going to end up being some changes in Atlanta. I'm not saying like Arthur Smith gets fired or anything like that. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. It is year 3 of this Arthur Smith, Terry Fontenot regime. But I think that ownership is going to look at this as like a fumbled the bag type of season, because I actually kind of think that the Bucs making the playoffs is maybe the most interesting team that could come out of this division. And like, that is a weird thing to say because they're quarterbacked by friggin' Baker Mayfield, but the Falcons are they should be the best team in this division. But I mean, look, Ridder is what he is, and like, this is their guy. They moonwalked into the season with him, and I think that there will be some level of changes, whether it's new quarterback, maybe a new coach. There's going to be some changes if the Falcons don't make the playoffs, because I think it will be looked at as a fumble the bag type of moment for them.
Yeah, they're probably going to make Arthur Smith change some of his staff. That's usually the next play. And then it's squarely the next envelope is prepare 2 envelopes, because they won't, Arthur Smith won't exist anymore. We did some prediction pieces this week and stuff that we're sick of. And I was saying that I was just sick of watching Arthur Smith drive a bunch of talented players into a ditch. But at least for one day, again, for fantasy, if you don't care about the win and the loss, at least the fantasy stuff for the Falcons pretty much got home today.
Yeah, like Drake London's not going to be a top 30 receiver most likely this year, but he's so good. Okay, so good.
He was terrific. He had 2 dynamite catches.
And oh, yeah.
10 of 11 targets. It validates you as you've been losing on Drake London all year. You see it, you go, aha, that's why I thought Drake London, that's what he did at the end of last year. That's what he did at USC. This is why I was a Drake London fanboy, because the guy can play football, man. Get Drake London the ball.
Yeah, and then you see Desmond Ridder on that interception. It's just like, oh my God, how could you throw that? And you're like, oh, right, that's why I probably shouldn't have not gotten that excited about Drake London. But, I mean, look, you bet on talent long-term at the position. I think that's a talent you should absolutely bet on. Sure. Moving on to the next one here, Bengals 34, Colts 14. The backup quarterback bowl is pretty easily won by the Cincinnati Bengals, who, I mean, Jake Browning, man, it wasn't perfect. Some of this 11.5 yards per attempt here from Browning is definitely due to screen passes, yak stuff from the playmakers. But I love the way the Bengals are playing on offense right now. And you got to give a lot of credit to Browning. You also got to give a lot of credit to a coaching staff that I've definitely criticized for being too static at times. But the stuff they're doing with Browning is not the stuff they do with Joe Burrow. And I think, again, that is a testament to the coaching staff.
Totally agree. And I've had those criticisms and questions as well. The only problem was that Cincinnati was in so much control over this game that they kind of phone booked the passing tree. Nobody had more than 4 targets. Browning played so well on Monday. I'm like, okay, well, this is great. Now we'll never be asked another Jamar Chase question again. I get that people were kind of down on T. Higgins. A lot of people didn't play him today. He had a couple of nice catches, but whatever, 72 yards without a touchdown isn't going to get you home. But because they were in control of this game, they didn't throw the ball proactively. As you said, most of the yardage, even though the YPA looks great, is because the backs had a couple of long plays. There were actually three big chunk plays in this game, and the rest of it was, okay, we're in control. Let's not give it away. I don't know. You still have to play Chase. I don't think Higgins is going to be probably somebody who's in the circle of trust until next year when he's either on a new team or maybe the Bengals keep him when he's back with Joe Burrow. But you know, Higgins is somebody now who's outside the top 30, top 40 on almost anybody's sheet. I'll tell you what I did not see coming. I realized they played Tennessee last week, but I thought when JT got hurt, Zach Moss was ready to really just run over people. And man, 13 for 28. He did have 28 yards in the receiving game. There was one possession. I think he had a touchdown wiped away, and then the Colts had a bunch of mishaps, and then they ended up like moving back like 25 yards at the goal line or something like that. But you and I will both fall Shane Steichen into a burning building, but I did not see Zach Moss face planting two games after Jonathan Taylor getting hurt.
Same, especially in this one. It's like Tennessee, okay, great run defense, whatever, but this one looked like a layup spot, and I'm sure when we get the playing time data, like, he's going to look great, and he could absolutely hit big the next couple of weeks. It's just one of those things where it hasn't happened, and that is going to make it tough to trust. But yeah, I mean, the process, right, Scott? This one definitely looks like this offense felt today like, oh, right, this offense is captained by Gardner Minshew, and it can only go so far. Like, Michael Pittman is really the only guy you can kind of set your watch to in this one.
He's so good. So Michael Pittman's breakout season has been wonderful. And then next year when they get Anthony Richardson, and I realize that it's hard to say right now what Richardson was or is. He didn't play a lot at Florida. He only got a few games in before he got hurt. But I'm buying long-term stock on the Indianapolis Colts for sure.
Same here. Bengals, they might make their way into the playoffs, and then I can't wait to see which national media member is going to go the farthest with the Jake Browning is Nick Foles comparison, because that is definitely coming at some point if they continue to win games here.
Plus, you know, they will play the Shakey's Pizza game. They'll be the first game on wildcard weekend.
100%. And by the way, another prediction too, like Chase Brown, how high does he go next year in fantasy drafts? I mean, Joe Mixon probably not on this team next year. Chase Brown's a guy that probably should be rostered in fantasy because he's making plays. And also, again, Joe Mixon goes down, like maybe he has a huge role here to end the season. So, I mean, he might have rest of season value. But, I mean, right now, this guy is looking like a prime, you know, who liked everybody? Chase Brown, Scott Pienowski tweet in a couple this time next year.
For sure. Yeah, the arrow pointing way up. He could, and generally, even though he's been playing a lot lately, we know that this offense usually is centered around one running back. So he's primed for a really nice breakout season next year.
Last game in our headliners section, 49ers 28, Seahawks 16. Obviously, this game lost a good bit of its juice when Drew Lock has to start for Geno Smith. Not that, you know, Drew Lock, I mean, he's Drew Lock, man. He's gonna give you some chance. He's gonna be live by the sword, die by the sword. That's Drew Lock, that's for sure. You know, Seahawks had their frustrating moments in this game as well, but man, just watching this one, it's just the 49ers are so unfair. Christian McCaffrey, you know, gets started with a 72-yard run. You know, Brandon Ayuk makes some big catches. He loses the one fumble. Deebo Samuel's just like a complete, I don't know what else to call him, but a complete freak show. Like, he's just an unfair, ridiculous player. And then, oh yeah, by the way, George Kittle can rip you for a 44-yard touchdown. It's just, I know it gets old to hear about it, but this offense is truly something I don't think we've seen before.
Yeah, I like the word unfair that you use, which applies. And even in a game where they only score 28, and Jordan Mason vultured that first touchdown because McCaffrey needed a rest after the 72-yard run, even in a game where that was capped, all of their primary guys get home. Purdy throws for 368, multiple touchdowns. McCaffrey has a huge yardage day. Deebo has just been ridiculous the last few days. I mean, I'm not feeling bad for anybody who has Brandon Ayuk when he gets 126 yards. And then Kittle tacks on the touchdown at the end of the game. It's to have all these guys on the same team. The only thing I don't like about it is it means every week somewhere it's going to be the old hot take. Brock Purdy's not really that good. It's a Shanahan offense. It's a system offense. Every great, tell me who was the greatest NFL player who had no like great players around him at quarterback. Everybody did. I mean, Peyton Manning, all they did when he was with the Colts is draft first round. He inherited Marvin Harrison. Then they draft Reggie Wayne. They draft Dallas Clark. They draft Joseph Addai. They draft Edgerrin James. Even guys didn't work out like Anthony Gonzalez. All they did is draft first round players. to stock the fridge for him. Yep. Eventually, when Tom Brady became Monster Tom Brady, it's because, well, they got Gronk and they got Randy Moss, and you know, Edelman was a great player and Welker was a great player. Good job by them scouting other teams. You know, since then, the Patriots have done a horrible job with their skill talent. But of course, Brock Purdy has great help around him because, you know, the Eagles have A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith. And, you know, Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill were part of the Chiefs world for so long. And it's just so frustrating that there's obviously no replacement for Tyreek Hill. But great players are always going to have great players around them. That's kind of the way football works. It's such a team game. But we talked last couple of weeks, but we thought the 49ers were the best team in football. No big surprise here. I don't think there's any reveal. Just keep pushing play on these guys. As far as the Seahawks go, got some DK questions today, got some Lockett questions today, and it was a variety. Some people, it made sense to start those guys. Some guys maybe didn't play them. But at least Drew Lock got you 269 and two touchdowns. At least Metcalf, who had his blow up at the end of the game, his meltdown, which is happening, it seems like, every couple of weeks. But at least he got an early touchdown. At least Lockett got 6 for 89, caught all six of his targets. I'm a little bit surprised. I thought at some point in the second half, JSN would start to spread his wings. It hasn't happened. I can't ding him on a day when Drew Lock plays because it's just not the offense they're supposed to be running. And obviously San Francisco is such a good defense. But if you were backed into a corner, at least Lockett and Metcalf kind of got home for you. Unfortunately, Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet didn't go anywhere. And I know as soon as people heard that Drew Lock was playing, I'm sure people were looking to start Seahawks, probably, if they had alternatives, probably backed off. But I can't blame the loss on Drew Lock. I mean, for the most part, it felt like the Niners could do whatever they want. I mean, 13.6 average yards per completion per attempt for Brock Purdy. That's just ridiculous.
Last thing I would say on this game, too, Seahawks wide receivers, you know, they kind of got home in this one, except JSN, who had a better game definitely on Thursday night. There's going to be that cannibalizing nature in this offense for both the backfield and the receivers. But the rest of the season schedule for the playoffs is very good for these guys. Eagles, Titans, Steelers. There's a lot of gettable spots here for the Seahawks receivers. But all right, with that, let's move on to the rest of the games here from week 14, starting with Bears 28, Lions 13. I mean, Scott, I hate to be narrative street, but like outdoor cold weather games for Jared Goff, am I right?
I'm worried about the Lions. And the Bears are one of those teams, one of those bad teams that kind of found its footing late in the season. Nobody wants to play. That Fields played well today. I mean, he still took three sacks, 6.8 yards per attempt, whatever. But he punches one in, hits the long connection to DJ Moore. The backfield's still a mess. I was hoping Roschon Johnson had done enough in the last few weeks to maybe get a role here. I'm not sure if he got hurt in this game, but he hardly played. Khalil Herbert didn't go anywhere. Dante Foreman had some nice efficiency stats, but he didn't get enough touches maybe to be relevant. Chicago's plucky. Chicago's pesky. Jared Goff was terrible today. Jared Goff was really bad in the first Chicago game, and somehow they stole it at the end. They did not steal this game today. A couple of St. Brown drops, you never see that. I mean, look, St. Brown's going to be fine. You'll go back to Sam Laporta. We know what Montgomery and Gibbs kind of are. They both get double-digit touches every week. They both have some touchdown equity. Today it was Gibbs, but is this right schedule? Broncos defense was nasty today, and they've really circled the wagons. They're a team that's physical and challenging to play. The Vikings, we know they love. They just pitched a shutout against the Raiders, but still counts. We know how much they love to blitz. Cowboys on December 30th. I mean, you know, sometimes Dallas morphs into a high-scoring game, but they have a pretty good defense too. I've been banging the drum all season of the Lions. I never said they're like they're the best offense in football, but I thought they were really easy to analyze, really easy to fantasy apply. Narrow tree, Ben Johnson, the offensive line, Goff's good enough. I don't know. Maybe Goff isn't good enough because the Bears, I thought the Bears really kicked their tails today. This was nothing was fluky about this game. From the opening snap, Chicago was the better football team.
Yeah, I almost couldn't care less if they ever do, like if they thump Detroit, or excuse me, if they thump Denver in Detroit next week, because we know at home, like Goff has great performances. We're not going to get like a real test, you know, an outdoor road game type of situation against a quality NFC playoff team, maybe, because Minnesota, even the away game in week 16, dome, Dallas, dome, like, right? Like these are favorable spots for Goff. And again, I hate to make it that simplistic, but this is like a career long trend with Jared Goff. And I think the biggest problem for the Lions, Scott, is that like with the way this defense is and like the cluster injuries in the secondary and how gettable that unit is, they need Jared Goff to be at least B plus every single week. And when he's this far below B plus, it's very troubling for this team, which, you know, even if they make the playoffs this year and, like, you know, they have a moment in the they're still like, I think they're still perfectly on schedule as a team. I think some folks might've just gotten a little bit over their skis with, like, all right, are they in Dallas's class or Philadelphia or 49ers? Like, no, they're not. But I think they're still a quality playoff team.
The one thing that scares me about Goff, it drives me crazy when people say about a quarterback, well, if you protect him and you give him time, you know, he can be effective, because that's every starting quarterback in the NFL, pretty much. Maybe Mac Jones is the exception. I'd say that about. But when Goff has bodies around him in the pocket, I never expect him to make a play out of structure. He may make a good play. He might make a good read, a good adjustment. He has rapport with a lot of his receivers. That's great. But there's no hero ball in Jared Goff. There's no off platform. When your initial play breaks down, I feel like Jared Goff doesn't have a plan B a lot of the time.
Totally agree. And I think that's got to be kind of concerning for this team, both short term and long term. All right, next game up here, Broncos 24, Chargers 7. I said it's always something with Kadarius Toney. It's always something with the damn Chargers, man. I mean, now Justin Herbert fractures a finger on his right hand. He's definitely going to miss time. Brandon Staley wasn't, like, super clear about it after the game, but he missed the rest of this game after leaving. Easton Stick got in there, and he did an all right job kind of distributing the ball, whatever. But they score 7 points. Like, this team is their Chargers are so frustrating. And now, obviously, like, one of the reasons you think, like, all right, well, lots of going wrong, but they have a chance because they have Justin Herbert. Well, now they're not even going to have Justin Herbert.
Yeah, Easton Stick. I mean, a guy named after hockey equipment was their quarterback for most of the day today. Hey, there are some miracles today. I mean, Austin Eckler back in the end zone. Quentin Johnson had 91 yards. Javonte Williams, who has been incredibly unlucky with touchdowns, finally got one. We know, of course, the Broncos have a touchdown for Cortland Sutton cooked up every week, and he gets in.
What a great catch, by the way. Cortland Sutton, number one. I mean, incredible catch down there for another touchdown this season. And Russ had time to slow cook a dish back there in the pocket. I mean, that Chargers defense, yikes.
Yeah, every Russell Wilson game is the same. Well, you're never going to get there on yardage, but you got to hope that he's going to have multiple touchdowns. And he got the two, which will put him somewhere in the middle of the pack. He didn't do much as a runner today. But Broncos, man, I'm just so impressed with how they've circled. Like, not that being the Chargers is that big of a deal, especially in a day where Herbert gets hurt, but they're physical, they're well coached. I think they're getting the best they can get out of Wilson, who's obviously a player with limitations. He needed a lot of his athleticism to offset the fact of how short he was, and he doesn't have that athleticism anymore. The receivers here are okay. Sutton's had a great season. Sutton's the guy you run to next gen stats, say how unlikely was that completion. He makes one of those catches at least every week, totally. And I love it. And I'll tell you what, I hit a prop on Quentin. Again, I was wrong on a ton of stuff today. I probably gave out more bad Cooper Kupp advice than anybody today, even as I said that the rain isn't a big deal. But I still told people not to play Kupp here and there, and I'm sure those people are unfollowing me as we speak. But I did hit a Quentin Johnson prop today, 3 for 91 on 4 targets. And with the Chargers, they're not going to the playoffs, right? What they need to do, one of the things they need to do, we're not sure if Allen will be back, Mike Williams will be back, they may have a new coaching staff. They need to kind of figure out what Quentin Johnson is and give him the reps, let him learn. And I know he's had soul-crushing drops and sometimes he runs the wrong route, but he's got a little bit of Mike Williams in this game. When he does make catches, they're splash plays, they're downfield plays, he's got a huge catch radius. He was a first-round pick. Nobody, even guys who bust, even like the Nikhil Harrys of the world, if you get drafted in the first round, you have some ability. I was encouraged by what Quentin Johnson did today. Maybe I'm going to regret saying that, but here we are.
I'm with you. The Easton Stick gave him a chance to make a play, and like he made it, which is, again, you just want him to stack those moments here as your season closes out. But, well, you know, Tom Telesco, GM, might not be back. Brandon Staley, I think, is definitely not going to be back. So a lot of questions here to answer for the LA Chargers down the stretch. Let's move on here to Jets 30, Texans 6. These last three games are rough, so we can definitely pick up the pace here. Scott, what do you got on this one?
Just sad to see CJ Stroud get hurt, and if he gets hurt, they're not, like most teams, not prepared. I know Davis Mills had a moment or two when he played earlier in his career, but as soon as Stroud got hurt, this game is pretty much over against a good Jets defense.
Nico Collins hurt right away, too.
Oh, right. I mean, Nico Collins and, hurt, too. And, right. A week after losing Tank Dell. So,
yeah. And then it's like, oh, well, who does. And then we're all the stuff we're saying about Bryce Young. Now we're kind of sort of saying that about these guys that CJ Stroud has to throw to.
I mean, look at the Texans, right? Yeah. They got these triplets, Stroud, Collins, and Dell, and they all get hurt in the matter of like a week and a half. That just sucks. There's nothing else you can say about that. Somewhere on Twitter, somebody's probably showing a ticket of, yeah, I have the Jets money line, Zach Wilson to throw for 300, you know, Garrett Wilson to go over 100, Brees Hall to score a touchdown, and they're, you know, they're picking out a new car online. So good for you. I did like Garrett Wilson today on the lone idea that Zach Wilson would just pepper him. And he 14 targets, I thought, was the range of outcomes. You know, that was within the range of outcomes. I didn't think 9 for 108 would be the result. I love it. Brees Hall was involved in the passing game. That's all I ask of the Jets, is just let your best players be your best players. There's a lot of weeks they haven't done that. There's a lot of weeks like Garrett Wilson's been wide open, waving his hand. The ball arrives late, if it arrives at all. Today, the Jets looked like an NFL offense, and we could play Hall and Wilson, I think, with some confidence going forward. They're never going to be sure things with this quarterback play, but at least they're going to get, 18 touches for Hall, 14 targets for Wilson. That's all I'm asking. And today we got what we wanted.
Yeah, Zach Wilson knows the assignment. Get the ball to Garrett Wilson. And Nate Hackett actually drew some stuff up for Brees Hall in the passing game, which is how Brees Hall is going to have to get there in this offense. So that was at least encouraging to see on a very brutal performance for the Texans, and just a bummer if CJ Stroud has to miss any time. Speaking of Bryce Young, who I just mentioned, next game up here, Saints 28, Panthers 6. Didn't have I think I had every game in the early slate on a screen here. So one of those was taken up by the Panthers Saints. What a pathetic, truly pathetic performance by the Panthers offense. And Derek Carr averaged 4.6 yards per attempt on the other side. Even the, Pat Doherty had a great A+ tweet. Pat Doherty, obviously, of Roto World. He's great. He's fantastic. NBC, Roto World, whatever. Fantastic. Pat Doherty's awesome. He said, Derek Carr screams anytime one of his teammates breathes wrong on one of his three weekly turnovers. Pat Mahomes ever so frustratedly claps at the 20th drop of the game. And that is so perfectly well said for both those two players. Even the offensive line was starting to clap back at old Derek Carr in this one, who I can't, for the fifth week in a row, it feels like I can't believe Derek Carr played in this game. But yeah, what an embarrassing showing of offensive football in this game.
The Saints defense, special teams was a really good fantasy winner today, but just about nothing else. Kamara, 3 catches for minus 11 yards. Now, it's a miracle that Derek Carr's continued to play through a litany of injuries, through concussions and shoulder problems and everything. But like most people, I just want to watch Jameis Winston play. He's making me treat Jameis Winston like he's Dan Fouts or somebody, or Philip Rivers, to come up with a more, he feels like Drew Brees to me in this offense. I'm just so had it with the Derek Carr experience. At least Olave got a touchdown this game, but only 5 targets, only 28 yards. They gave 11 carries to Jamal Williams. Who the heck knows why? The problem is, once you get ahead of the Panthers by more than one score, the game is over. I will give it up for Chuba Hubbard, who's kind of like the poor man's Rashad White. Nobody really thinks he's all that good, but he's getting all sorts of volume. He had 25 touches in this game. So what, 25 touches, over 100 total yards. That's something. I gave up Jonathan Mingo as a sleeper. If you told me he'd get 9 targets, I know they're Bryce Young targets, I'm like, okay, a couple of big plays are possible. We'll get 9 targets, he had 22 yards. So even with the most opportunity on the team in the passing game, he went down as a loss. And that stings, man. The Panthers are down bad. It wasn't all Frank Reich. Everything's broken here. The management is broken. The quarterback looks like the wrong pick. Their best receiver is a guy who's in his mid-30s, who's a nice player, but he should be like a team's 3 or 4. He shouldn't be your priority guy. Chuba Hubbard is a nice backup masquerading as a starter. It's just, there's so many things wrong with this team right now.
Yeah, so many things wrong. At one point, Bryce Young was 1 for 8. 1 for 8, and Jonathan Vilma, who called the game, was really making some great points about Bryce Young's pocket presence and everything. And I don't blame his pocket presence for being bad, because he gets mashed like every couple of plays. So, yeah, everything's wrong with the Panthers.
He's never going to get taller. He's always going to have problems negotiating an NFL pocket.
God, just disaster. Speaking of disaster, final game we get to talk about here, Vikings 3, Raiders 0. Yeah, that's right. I'm not missing any points there. There are 3 points scored in this game, all by the Vikings. And by the way, again, if you missed it, shout out to you. You didn't miss much. Greg Joseph kicked the 36-yard game-winning field goal with 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter. there was a long time this game was 0-0. Andy and I talked about Josh Dobbs in a video this morning, Scott, and I made the point that how it is in a relationship. It's like, once you decide you're breaking up with somebody, or you start thinking about this relationship, I like, what if I was single? You know, just imagining what my life look like, would look like if I was single and not in this relationship. Like, you've broken up with the person. Okay. You've broken up. And once you start thinking about benching your quarterback, like, that guy can get an in-game benching at any moment. And that is exactly what we saw with Josh Dobbs, who was pulled for Nick Mullins. Not that it mattered much.
Dobbs pulled. Justin Jefferson hurt.
Went to the hospital.
You know, I mean, yeah, it's his season could be in jeopardy. And you can't, but Dobbs played really, he's played really poorly for a few weeks. They were considering this through the bye week. So I gave, Dobbs took a ton of sacks in this game. And just, I thought Minnesota played a really bad football game. And the Raiders said, well, don't worry, we got you. I thought this had a chance to be a 0-0 game. And then Minnesota kicks the field goal. And the most exciting part of this game was if Minnesota was going to steal a cover. And they said, you know what? We don't even have to do that. We're just going to do like a little pooch punt and let them waste 11 seconds running it back. They have no chance of getting in the field goal range. I mean, that's how unafraid of the Raiders that the Vikings were. And you know, I thought a few weeks ago that Aiden O'Connell could be. All I wanted him to be was good enough to support Jacobs, to support Adams, to support Jacoby Myers. And I got to give that up. He's not good enough to do those things.
Yeah, Hunter Renfro randomly has the biggest play of this game with a 38-yard reception. Josh Jacobs leaves this one with an injury as well. You have to wonder if his season starts to get in jeopardy at some point late in the year. No long-term contract, the whole deal. I know Antonio Pierce, like, it's his mission to get him 100 rushing yards or 20 carries, whatever, any single game. But if he's dealing with an injury, that seems like pretty problematic.
Oh, it looks like we got Chargers Raiders on Thursday night. That's going to be delightful.
It's looking like another skip.
Right. Like, yeah. Another. Right. Yeah. It looks so easy. Your skips are so easy. Right. Right. That's just one of them. You're like, okay, go Christmas caroling, go drink some eggnog, buy some presents, shovel some snow, whatever it is you do in December when you're not watching football, you can do that on Thursday night.
Like Andy said last week, walk your fish, take it for a walk, see what happens. Whatever happens is probably more interesting than Aiden O'Connell versus, I mean, damn, you know, Easton Stick. So
you can't be flexed out of a Thursday game. That's one thing that we haven't come up with. The Patriots can be flexed out of a Monday game, out of a Patrick Mahomes game, but the Thursday night games have to stick. Al Michaels has to call those.
Al Michaels knows it. Yeah, but if anybody knows those games have to stick, it is Al Michaels.
He'll be so great. He'll be so great in that game with all of his off script comments. I mean, he'll openly say it. He's a rascal. He kind of loves that stuff. So I'll listen for Al Michaels. But and hopefully it's fantasy playoffs next week, Matt. I hope we don't need a lot of guys in this game. I mean, you might play some of them, but I hope I'm not going to play any Raiders. I can tell you that.
Yeah, that is for sure. All right. Hell of a show, Scott. Week 14 was fun. It was interesting. Some real, real bad that we finished with, but some really good stuff, some big games to start the show. That is going to do it for us. Be sure to tune in on Tuesday tomorrow when Andy Behrens and I go over the playoff panic meter as we head in here to week 15. Secret lists are back. We're talking about, you know, guys that let you down, the whole deal. We'll take some of your submissions if you still have them. FantasyMailbag@yahoosports.com if you want to send those in. We'll also talk some top waiver wire pickups. Until then, we're out.